From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Professional golf is seeing green these days, not the green of lush fairways, nor of billions in advertising dollars, not even the green of that cherished blazer worn each year by the winner of the Masters tournament. Pro golf is seeing a sickly green because of the controversy swirling around Augusta National Golf Club and its men-only membership policy. In this hour, Augusta's trial by fire and the place of single-gender institutions in America. We begin with the latest defense of men only by Hootie Johnson, chairman of Augusta National. Steve Rushen is a writer with Sports Illustrated magazine who had an exclusive interview with the chairman of the board last week. I asked him if Augusta is showing any signs of cracking open its membership doors to women.
They're showing no sign of it. They made a point to say that they have no plans to admit a woman before the 2003 Masters. And Hootie Johnson made a point of telling me that they can withstand having no sponsors through at least the 2004 Masters, which doesn't suggest to me that they plan to do it immediately after the Masters in 2003.
When all this blew up last summer, Hootie Johnson said he would not be bullied into admitting a female member at what he said was the point of a bayonet. Is he still digging in his heels with that kind of attitude?
He told me he regrets using that kind of language. It may have been toned it down a little, he said. And I want to make a point that I'm not Hootie's spokesperson by any means.
We got it.
I'm just relaying what he told me. He regretted, I think, that kind of language only inflaming the situation. But he certainly doesn't back off his steadfast stance on not being told what to do as the chairman of Augusta National.
Steve Rushen, describe for our listeners who may not be golfers or who may be women who haven't been to Augusta, what is Augusta National Golf Club? Why does it loom so large in the national sports mind?
Well, it's a golf club started in the early 1930s by the great Bobby Jones and Clifford Roberts, who was the first chairman of the club. And it hosts probably the most prestigious golf tournament in America, if not the world, the Masters. And that 1 week a year in April, they open their doors to tens of thousands of fans who come and have the run of the place, or at least of the course, and get to see all the great golfers of the world. Tiger Woods has owned the place for the last few years. And then they close their doors at the end of that week, and it's a private club with about 300 members. Nobody knows for sure because their membership rules aren't public, but you know, word leaks out that Bill Gates is being denied membership he wants to join. Now word is that Bill Gates was allowed in, but nobody really knows for sure. So one change they have made as a result of all of this controversy is Hootie Johnson did do a few interviews last week, and those are things he hasn't really done in the past. So they did invite a few people in and able to look around. It's kind of like going to visit the Wizard of Oz and peeking behind the curtain.
So all the members are male, but women can play at the club, though not during the tournament.
Yes, they make a point of telling you that women played more than 1,000 rounds there last year. Hootie Johnson is married. He has four daughters. Three of them play golf. His wife and daughters will be playing, and granddaughters will be playing there over Thanksgiving.
We're going to hear later in this hour from Martha Burke, the spokeswoman from the National Council of Women's Organizations, who's been giving Hootie Johnson a hard time over the past few months. We'll hear her case, but what's the club's case for keeping an all-male membership?
Well, for one, they make a point of telling you that it's their legal right, their constitutional right to choose and associate, and they don't get a lot of argument there that they have the right to bar women from joining as members if they want to do that. And as far as the propriety of it, they say nobody is denouncing the Junior League, the Boy Scouts, the Girl Scouts, Smith College, or all the other institutions that have been single-gender institutions. They align themselves with the Girl Scouts. Nobody wants to denounce the Girl Scouts. Why are they denouncing Augusta National Golf Club? That's their argument. It's not my argument. It's just telling what they're telling me. Nobody has tried to sell me cookies from Augusta National door to door, but that's their line, and they're sticking to it.
We've got it. From your interview with Hootie Johnson in Sports Illustrated, you quote him saying, "Our membership has historically enjoyed a kindred spirit and a camaraderie that we view as being the very heart and soul of our private club. It is difficult for us to consider changing something that has worked so well for us." So they're saying, we like to get together as men. We're entitled to do it legally, and that's that.
That's that. And in fact, it's interesting you mentioned that quote. That is the one and only quote from an hour-long interview that he actually picked up and read off of a piece of paper.
He wanted that message across.
Worded statement that I think had probably passed over a few desks before he was reading it out to me.
Sounds like it. So what is the sponsorship situation now for the Masters Tournament coming up next year? This is big money, big TV rights. How does it look at this point?
Well, Hootie Johnson and Augusta National preemptively went to the tournament sponsors and asked them not to sponsor the tournament this year because he knew that Martha Burke and others would be putting pressure on the sponsors, and he just wanted to avoid that public fiasco that would be. And the Masters only had, unique among most television programming and certainly television sports programming, only had, I think it was 4 minutes of advertising per hour on CBS. So they had always kept it to a minimum. You know, they don't have sponsorship out on the course. It's all very relatively, anyway, discreet. But it was a preemptive move on their part so that their advertisers weren't going to be picketed.
And pressured to pull out. But we're still talking about some big money here.
We're talking about tens of millions of dollars. I think the figures I've read that the Masters brings in $150 million each year. It certainly brings in loads of money to the local economy. 100,000 people converge on Augusta for their hotels, houses that are rented out, restaurants. Somebody was saying down there how, hey, bring on the protesters for next year's Masters. They're going to need a place to stay and a place to eat also.
We saw that, though the protesters, some are threatening to be at Augusta in green burqas, reminiscent of the burqas in Kabul and Afghanistan. Is there a culture around Augusta that's simply immune to this, or do you see, have we seen some of the big members, because there are some very prominent members, looking, sounding troubled publicly over the men-only policy?
Well, I don't think they're immune to it. I do think that the Masters is such a vital part of the local, not only the local economy, but the local self-esteem, if you will. Across from Augusta, which is this just beautifully manicured green cathedral-looking place, across from it, outside the grounds, none of which you can see from inside the grounds, is a highway with every fast food and motel and car washes. And directly across, for instance, is the Masters, the Masters spot, strip mall. We're Masters of Convenience. There's the Green Jacket dry cleaners. You know, there's every kind of play on Augusta.
So it may be a little piece of heaven of a sort, but it's surrounded by the real world.
Exactly. I mean, completely. The helicopter shot of the course never pulls up to reveal the rest of
the
surroundings. But Hootie Johnson said, and would say, that we do good for the local economy. 1 week a year, and for golf fans around the world, 150 million people watch it on television. Why are we being punished for that? And I think, and I can't speak obviously for everybody in a large place like Augusta, but I think a lot of people down there do feel like the Masters does a lot for the local economy.
How about Tiger Woods, the Tiger Woods factor? He's such a big figure in golf these days. If he backed away, that would be a big deal, I guess. Has he shown any sign that he might?
No, he's not going to. He was asked about this when all of this came up, and he sort of hemmed and hawed about it. And then at every press conference after that, and Tiger doesn't do a lot of press conferences. I've covered a number of golf tournaments, and he doesn't show up in the press tent all that often, partly, I think, to avoid questions like this. I think he is very reluctant to jeopardize any of his manifold endorsement contracts, and you know, these are golf related things, and I think a lot of golf fans, and I this is just, you know, this is not scientific, but I think a lot of golf fans are older white males who may not be as sympathetic to this issue as a more diverse cross section of Americans.
So at this point, the message from Hootie Johnson in Augusta appears to be essentially buzz off.
That it would have saved me some time if that had been the entirety of his message. But I think you can boil it down to that. I think also that they just don't want the perception that they're being told what to do. I asked him point blank, were you considering admitting a woman as a member before this controversy erupted, which some people had suggested was the case. He said no. At the same time, I think he feels like if we admit a woman now, it's going to look like we did it at the point of this bayonet, his words. I don't imagine that they'll do it anytime soon.
Steve Rushen, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Steve Rushen is a writer with Sports Illustrated. He spoke to us earlier from New York. Just how seriously is this country taking the flap over Augusta? Consider this. An editorial in today's New York Times called on three-time winner of the Masters Tournament, Tiger Woods, to skip the tournament, saying it would send a powerful message that discrimination isn't good for the golfing business. On TV, radio, and front pages, the public battle over the rights of a private club has made headlines. What do you think? Is this ugly old discrimination, pure and simple? Does a private club have the right to draw gender boundaries wherever it wants? And what does this all say about the future of single-sex institutions in America? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Houston, Texas, is David Dow, professor of constitutional law at the University of Houston Law Center. Good evening and welcome, David Dow.
Thanks. My pleasure to be with you.
Thanks for joining us. David Dow, take us to the legal bottom line here. Is a private club in America in 2002 entitled by the Supreme Court's standing interpretation of the Constitution to close its doors to one gender or the other?
Well, the answer is that it depends on state law, really. There isn't a constitutional rule that would require the Augusta Club to open its doors to women. If there were a state law that required the club to do that, then the Supreme Court has said that states are permitted to do that. So, in other words, the private club can't claim that it has a constitutional right to keep people out if the state says, no, you have to let them in.
So clearly, Georgia does not require Augusta to do that. How common is that among American states? Could Augusta exist in half the states, all the states? What's the terrain?
Oh, gosh, it certainly could not exist in close to half of the states. In close to half of the states, there are maybe not quite half. In a substantial minority of the states, there are laws that basically prohibit discrimination on the basis of race, gender, other sorts of characteristics, religion. And those laws apply to public accommodations, public recreational facilities, all of that sort of thing. As long as the club is sufficiently large, then in most states it'll be governed by non-discrimination law, and a club that has 300 or so members, which was the number I heard Steve Rushen refer to, I think would be a number that's large enough to bring that club within the ambit of the state's anti-discrimination law.
Why has the Supreme Court left this ground open for states to decide?
Well, there's this basic tension in constitutional law between the right that individuals have to associate with whomever they want and this idea of equality that we have in America. And what the court has really done lately is leave it up to states to negotiate that balance. There have been a few cases where the Supreme Court has ruled on the side of equality. For example, in the mid-1980s, there were a number of I don't really even know what you call them, social clubs, I suppose. It had been previously all-male clubs. I'm thinking of things like the JCs and the Rotary Clubs. And those clubs went to the Supreme Court to try to stop the states from requiring that they admit women as members. And the Supreme Court said, no, the states can require that if they want to. On the other hand, in the last few years, the Supreme Court has, I think, been more solicitous of the efforts of private organizations to keep out gay members. For example, the Boy Scouts, as you may remember, kicked out a gay scout leader. And similarly, when the Irish Americans were going to have a float in the New York parade a number of years ago and wanted to keep gay people out of their parade, the Supreme Court said that was all right, too. So the court has, I think, in the last 10 or 15 or 20 years, swung back and forth between the focus on equality on the one hand and the focus on the right that people have to associate with whomever they want on the other hand. But at least in the club setting, I think the court has tended to be more on the side of equality than it's been on the side of people being allowed to discriminate against certain people who have characteristics that they don't want to invite into their club.
But as we all know, there's more than law at work here. We're talking tonight about Augusta National Golf Club and the place of single-gender institutions in America. Is there a place in America for private single-sex institutions? Join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Augusta National Golf Club and the place of single-gender institutions in America. Is there a place in this country for private single-sex institutions? And if men want to golf without women, is that their right? What if they're the most powerful men in America? Does that make a difference? Is Augusta's Hootie Johnson right, or is he all wrong? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've been talking with David Dow from the University of Houston Law Center. I want to welcome into our conversation now Martha Burke. She's chairwoman, of the National Council of Women's Organizations. She joins us tonight from Washington, D.C. Good evening and welcome, Martha Burke.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks for being with us. We're also welcoming to the show Charlotte Hayes, also from Washington tonight. She's editor of the Women's Quarterly at the Independent Women's Forum. Good evening and welcome, Charlotte Hayes.
Thanks, Tom. Glad to be here.
Martha Burke, let's turn to you first. You put the stick or the golf club in this beehive in a big way. You've whipped up quite a storm here over Augusta National. Why did you choose a golf club as fancy and prestigious and exclusive as it may be? Why is this your target?
Well, we chose to write a private letter to Augusta, and I want to remind the listeners that that's exactly what we did.
Mm-hmm.
Because they do host the Masters. They've made themselves a public institution. And when we became aware that they didn't allow women members, we didn't know it until this past golf tournament in April. It was already an issue in the press. That's how I found out about it. And Lloyd Ward, who's head of the U.S. Olympic Committee, an African-American.
And a member
of Augusta.
One of the few African-American members.
Right. Had said that he was going to advocate internally to change the policy. And so the National Council of Women's Organizations decided that if we wrote a letter in support of that position, that it actually might help Ward and other internal advocates to change the policy. We never intended that it be a international media event. Augusta mm-hmm. did that when they went very public with their response to us.
Mm-hmm. I guess at this point, of all the clubs in all the world, does this one still seem worth the coin you're spending on it?
Well, we spend coin every day on mm-hmm. breaking down barriers to discrimination.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to make a choice between working for women in Afghanistan, which we've been accused of not doing, and we do that every day,
mm-hmm.
or working for better child care or better breast cancer research. We don't have to make a choice. We can do all of that. We do it all.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't quite know what you mean by spending the coin.
Well, it's just a matter of attention. Give us your case. We've heard through Stephen Rushen in the Sports Illustrated interview with Hootie Johnson, we've basically heard his argument. He's saying, look, we value this male camaraderie. We have a right to it, and why should we open our doors? What's your case in opposition to that?
Well, there's a moral obligation here. As far as I know, they probably are on safe enough legal ground, although it hasn't been tested. They may not mm-hmm. be. You know, some mm-hmm. clubs, as I heard your previous guest saying, have lost that battle. Because they have turned themselves into what is essentially a public accommodation, or they do business on the grounds of the club and shut out women or members of races they don't like, or they hold a liquor license that is granted by the public governing bodies, and in many cases it's illegal to discriminate even if you hold a liquor license. So I don't know that they're on all that safe ground legally, but morally,
mm-hmm.
we know that they're wrong. When you turn yourself into a public entity in the way they have, when you seek the public spotlight and the public approval, you also give up the right to claim you're just a few friends getting together. You make yourself morally obligated to be bound by the norms of society, whether it's the legal case is a different question. It's a moral case.
Mm-hmm. Charlotte Hayes, come in here. I know your group has spoken in opposition to the campaign to open up Augusta National Golf Club. Why? Why not have women members at Augusta?
Well, look, I really admire Hootie Johnson for not backing down and not being intimidated and not being scared. There's absolutely nothing wrong with a single-sex golf club. I mean, this is really the trivialization of the women's movement. They want to get into dictate the membership of an exclusive golf club that Bill Gates had a hard time getting into give me a break. I went to a press conference last week where there was a woman who had a catering business in Augusta, and she was saying, you know, that this campaign against the Augusta Golf Club could cost her money. Look, this is not for women. This is not for mainstream women. This is just, you know, the trivialization of the women's movement, in my view. There's nothing wrong with a single-sex golf club.
Well, but does it matter when, as Martha Burke says, it's become such a national, even global institution, and when the membership is such a high-powered membership that even Bill Gates has trouble getting in? Does that change the situation? Does it make the stakes different, Charlotte Hayes?
No, it really doesn't. If you think that there's something intrinsically wrong with a single-sex club, then sure, you think this was wrong. I don't think there's anything intrinsically wrong with it. I mean, I would have no problem with a single-sex girl school, a boy school hosting a national event. Look, I don't happen to be the sort of woman who belongs to the junior league, but some women do. They like it. Let them do it. I don't see anything intrinsically wrong with single-sex organizations. And I, to her credit, Martha's not going against them in a sort of legal way. They're not challenging the right to free association. But that's a very, very important right. Hey, let the guys go play golf. Thank God I don't have to belong to this club.
Well, there's not a legal challenge at the moment, but there could be. Martha Burke, what about this argument that Hootie Johnson makes, that you heard from Charlotte Hayes? We have a lot of single-sex, single-gender institutions in America. Is there a message that we should interpret from your attack on Augusta?
Well, yeah. The difference here is this is not just about a few guys playing golf.
Mm-hmm.
This is emblematic of keeping women out of the seats of power. Don't tell me that a golf club that has the head of America, the world's largest corporations, that they're not doing business there, that deals are not made on the exercycles at the health club.
Mm-hmm.
Deals are made on the greens. Deals are made in the grill rooms. This is just emblematic of the way women are still being shut out. Women are still only 7% of corporate boards and something like 2% of CEOs. It's emblematic. You know, I'm getting emails. I'm getting phone calls mm-hmm. from women who say, I'm not a golfer. I don't care about golf. But this reminds me of the glass ceiling. It reminds me of the pay equity issue. It reminds me that I had a younger guy promoted over me because he was a man,
mm-hmm.
and I'm mad about it. And I would say it goes to corporate hypocrisy. How can you claim, as a corporate CEO, to value women as employees, to go after women's dollars as customers?
And all do that today.
On the one hand, they all do that. Oh, mm-hmm. we're for diversity. We're for fairness.
Mm-hmm.
We value women in all these capacities. But on the other hand, we're a member of this club. Now, if a guy is willing to do that, is he also willing to look the other way if women aren't quite paid up to par in his corporation, or if they don't get promoted in the same numbers that men do? It's a question.
Mm-hmm. David Dow, we've heard your legal interpretation here. Where, in your view, does this bleed over into a moral issue, or does it?
Well, I think that it's principally a moral issue. I mean, I think that as Martha Burke was saying, I think that there's an arguable legal basis to challenge what Augusta is doing, but I think that it's only arguable, and that it's principally a moral question, not principally a legal question. And I think that there are some, you know, I think that there's some lessons in America that we can learn from American history. I mean, once upon a time, blacks weren't allowed to eat in certain restaurants, and the notion was, hey, blacks can go eat, you know, in their own restaurants. There's black restaurants and there's white restaurants, mm-hmm. and those sorts of barriers were broken down because of a moral view. You know, the moral view that there's racial equality took precedence over the right of members, you know, of the KKK to associate freely in a private restaurant.
And is there a point at which, as a culture, we get beyond that and we can once again associate along gender lines, let's say, or is that a perpetual issue in a diverse country like this?
I think that as long as there is stratification along certain lines in a society, then you can't really have discrimination that mirrors the lines of that stratification. In other words, if there were true gender equality mm-hmm. in the United States, this wouldn't be an issue.
That's
but,
right.
But when
let me just, could I jump in?
Is that Charlotte Hayes?
Yeah, it is. It does seem to me, look, I don't know how well the rule is observed, and it may be a silly rule, but at Augusta they have a rule against discussing business at the club. Now, it would be naive to think that deals weren't made, mm-hmm. but look, you can't be around when every deal is made. Sometimes, you know, I mean, are we going to go to the bathroom with guys? Are we going to mandate unisex bathrooms?
No, but,
well, no, but it's not as private as a bathroom, is it? Martha Burke?
That isn't the point. If I'm trying to sell widgets and my male competitor is trying to sell widgets and he's able to take his client to the Augusta or some club like it and wine and dine him, play on the most beautiful course on the planet, nice dinner in the grill room, and I have to wait outside the gate after the 4 or 5 hours he spent with the client and say, hey, can I talk to you now? Do you think that puts me at a disadvantage? Yes,
no,
it
I don't.
Does.
I mean, couldn't you go to another restaurant, Martha?
Well,
I mean, aren't there some other fancy
argument.
Places
that's
you might take people?
Well, we see that, but we also see Augusta sitting in a way at the top of a kind of national pyramid here. Charlotte Hayes, Martha Burke, David Dell, we have so many callers who want to join us. We want to invite them in. Sean is calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Hi, Shauna, you're on the air.
Hi there, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
I have to agree mostly with Charlotte Hayes' point of view, I think. I mean, I certainly understand the frustration that it sounds like Martha is feeling. I think that issues like this so often get turned into more than what they're actually about. We're talking about discrimination against race now. We're talking about, you know, gays in the Boy Scouts were mentioned earlier. I think that I mean, I myself go to an all-women's college, not necessarily by choice. It happened to be where the best degree program was. But there are same-sex institutions, and I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I don't think there's anything wrong with saying, you know, if it is from a personal standpoint, if it is from, let's say, a camaraderie standpoint, mm-hmm. that it was originally established as, I don't think there's anything wrong with it at all.
But, Shauna, as a woman, just if I may ask back to Shauna, Martha Burke, as a woman,
sure.
When you can imagine a career ahead of you, and if at some point you're feeling a glass ceiling or you're at a point in negotiations and then two male colleagues peel off and go to Augusta, you can't follow. Can you imagine feeling disadvantaged by that?
I think that even without Augusta, I'll be fine because mm-hmm. I could go to a restaurant. There are plenty of restaurants around here. That is just not something I'm worried about. And the fact that
I agree.
Shauna, are you on the same wavelength there?
Yeah, I am, actually. If that is up to me to be my best in my career and to strategize in the way that I think is possible. I mean, we're always going to be, men and women alike, are always going to be trying to top each other, whether I'm competing with another woman in the same field or whether I'm competing with a man. There are going to be, you know, my colleague may have a strategy that I haven't thought of, and I said, oh my God, she took him to some big fancy hotel that I can't afford. Well, unfortunately, that's just how it is. I may not be able to do that, but then I'm going to have to strategize or maybe find the funds or the place or
We got it. Shauna, we hear the pragmatism, but Martha Burke, respond here. Here's a woman saying thanks, but no thanks.
I would like to respond to that. Mm-hmm. You do potentially have the ability, in the example you gave, to either get the money to take the person to the nicer hotel.
You're really going to have to get the money if you want to join that golf club.
I'd like to finish my mm-hmm. point. But if you're being barred by your gender, mm-hmm. you have no potential to overcome that barrier. And that is the essence of what discrimination is about, whether it's race, whether it's gender. You don't have the potential, if you're African American and it's a club that bars blacks from membership, no matter what you do, no matter how good you get at what you do or how rich you get, you can't come in because of an immutable characteristic. And that is the essence of discrimination. So I don't think either of you would be making this argument if it was a race issue. I really don't think you would say, let me finish, please. I don't think you would say, well, let the blacks go to their own restaurants. I just don't think you would say that.
Of course not.
Mm-hmm. Charlotte Hayes, Martha Brooks, stand by. Eric's calling from Boston. Hi, Eric. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you.
Sure.
I think this is really boils down to discrimination in a different form, and I wonder if it weren't illegal to discriminate races, whether the same would be true for this club. I think this is just a way that men can hold on to power and keep women in a one-down position. I mean, it goes almost back to the times when women didn't have pockets in their pants. to prevent them from carrying things of power, keys, money, wallet, etc.
Eric, what do you make of the argument that some people make then that men also deserve, well, Hootie Johnson makes it, men deserve a place for camaraderie too, apart from women? Is that just asserting an old power advantage or not?
What I think men can still enjoy camaraderie on that golf course. Maybe they pair up with a group of four golfers that are men. They can choose not to golf with women if they don't want to. So, I don't think that would create a liability for the golf course. I think they could still enjoy one another's company.
You sure that's not discrimination?
No, I think the caller is right. This is about the halls of power and keeping women in a one-down position.
It's also, if I can just say, I mean, another point that the caller identified is the difference between sort of individual choices and institutional choices.
Mm-hmm.
And here you have, you know, individuals can golf with whomever they want, but that's quite different from saying that the institution can exclude certain people.
Well, but that comes, doesn't it, to this issue of whether men or women, for that matter, have a right to get together regularly in an exclusive environment. Martha Burke, can you imagine situations in which that'd be fine by you?
Well, I think what I would do is come down on the side of common sense, which is actually what most states have done. Most states have said, look, up to a point, your free association right is absolute. We're not going to come into your basement and tell you who can come to your Friday night poker game. We're not going to tell you who can come to your backyard barbecue.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get past a certain level of membership, in New York, I think it's 200-300 members. In some states, it's as low as 50. Then you can no longer claim to be just a few friends getting together. You are an institution, as my colleague has said. You're something different than just a few friends getting together. And that's the crux of the argument here. Whether they're on solid legal ground or not, they're not on solid moral ground. Let's take Amo Houghton, who is a member of that club and also a member of the United States Congress. Now, it is legal for Mr. Houghton to be a member of the club, but it's certainly morally reprehensible for him to be a member of a club that excludes 50% of his constituents. He's got a higher obligation than that.
So are you saying that the argument about the need for male camaraderie in this kind of environment is hooey?
Well, I'm saying that once you get past a certain point, you're not playing poker in the basement on Friday night. You're really, it's about something else. It's about power. It's about keeping women out. And, you know, I don't have any problem with male camaraderie. That's not what this is.
Mm-hmm.
Augusta National is a multi-million dollar for-profit corporation putting on a multi-million dollar sporting event. Let's be clear about who they are. They're not a few old guys on the back nine.
And Martha Burke, we just have a few seconds left, but if you win at Augusta, what are the ramifications? What does it help you do?
Well, I think it helps us show that we can't have, for one thing, the kind of corporate hypocrisy that's going on, that's not acceptable anymore.
A public face and a private face.
Exactly, and that society has higher standards than that, and people are going to have to adhere to those.
Martha Burke, I know we have to let you go. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Martha Burke is chairwoman of the National Council of Women's Organizations. Charlotte Hayes and David Dow, we look forward to more conversations. Stay with us, please. And listeners, if Augusta's gates are thrown open, should women-only health clubs, colleges, social clubs be pressed to do the same? And is a golf course the right battlefield for gender equality? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Augusta National Golf Club in Georgia and the place of single-gender institutions in America today. We've been talking with Martha Burke, chairwoman of the National Council of Women's Organizations, who has given Augusta National quite a ride with her demand that they open their doors, their membership doors, to women. Martha's gone, but we've got a lot more to talk about. We're joined by Charlotte Hayes, editor of the Women's Quarterly at the Independent Women's Forum, by David Dow, a law professor at the University of Houston Law Center, and you are welcome as well. Do you want to see some kinds of gender exclusion protected or not? And is male dominance still so great in America that we can't afford to let men golf alone? Even very powerful men. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Andrew's calling from Acton, Massachusetts. Hi, Andrew. You're on the air.
Isn't it a bit hypocritical to be trying to tear down one set of barriers against a gender while trying to erect others?
What are the others, Andrew?
Recently in Boston, in the last couple of years, there were several court battles fought over women's-only health clubs. And I really take exception to the notice that deals are not made in the gym or on the treadmills. Quite honestly, I've made a few deals, gotten a few consulting assignments while at a health club, while lifting weights, while on a treadmill. And that these are the up-and-coming places. I mean, I think I don't know where golf membership is these days, but I would think that health clubs are more popular than golf clubs. But anyway,
So you're saying if we have gender exclusion anywhere, why go after the Masters and Augusta?
Well, I think the notion is if you're going to defend gender exclusion in one place,
mm-hmm.
I think it's hypocritical to oppose it in another.
Andrew, hold that thought. Thanks very much for calling. I want to welcome into our conversation, maybe to respond to that, Sumru Arkut. She's Associate Director of the Center for Research on Women at Wellesley College. Good evening and welcome, Sumru Arkut.
Hi.
Thanks for joining us. You heard the question from Andrew. What about it? We know that we have gender-exclusive institutions in this country, from colleges to clubs to health clubs and golf clubs in the situation of Augusta. Are these all on one plane? If we open up Augusta, does it mean we should open up every Girl Scout troop and women's health club as well?
I think we need to think in terms of equality of opportunity as the deciding factor here. Any institution that restricts equality of opportunity is discriminatory, but something that promotes it or protects people who have not had equal opportunity, that's acceptable.
So what are you saying there, Sumru, about, let's say, women's health clubs?
Women's health clubs, I think it could go one way or another. Maybe it's an issue of protection. Maybe it's an issue of feeling safe. Maybe gendered violence is in the minds of people, and they don't feel safe. But that can be negotiated. The real issue here is an institution keeping out certain people, and by doing so, restricting their opportunities, or is an institution single-sex to promote greater opportunity?
Mm-hmm. Charlotte
I'm
Hayes,
at Wellesley College.
Mm-hmm.
It's a single-sex institution,
mm-hmm.
and since its inception, every president of the student body has been a young woman.
Charlotte Hayes, I want to bring you in. What about this issue of opportunity? As you point out, the rules at Augusta formally prohibit members from talking business on the greens, but yet you can see their relationships here. Is there an equal opportunity issue when we close the doors in realms of high power to one race, one gender? Draw lines.
Well, look, I mean, the opportunity at Augusta is to play golf. I'm sure people become friends if they benefit this way and that way, but it's ridiculous to get into all this. Martha said, okay, it's okay to let guys play poker in the basement. But when it gets big, you have to make it open up. Look, where do we draw the line? Do we say five people can, you know, X number of people can play poker in the basement, but if it gets this big or if they have this much money, you know, we've got to have the federal government come in and break it up? No, this is really ridiculous.
So you're not willing to acknowledge a kind of opportunity thread that runs through the clubhouse at a place like Augusta, Charlotte Hayes? I mean, that also seems to be denying reality to some extent.
You have other opportunities in other places. I mean, look, Bill Gates is not going to be able to go into the women's health club where the high-powered women are making deals. Big deal.
If Bill Gates needed to do that, I'm sure that would happen.
Well, it's people
who have less power who perhaps need the protection and support of single-sex institutions. And this is a very contemporary phenomenon.
Our notion
of equality has changed over time. It was only white men who owned land who could vote at one point in time. Our notions are changing. We've included people who were not white. We have included women as equals. But not all realms are equal at this time.
Well, now, do you believe that the single-sex gym club, the ladies' gym club, should be opened up to men?
I think the issue is whether there is a need for safety for keeping it single-safe.
Well, maybe these guys feel safer golfing with women around.
If there isn't, open it up.
Huh?
If it isn't an issue of safety,
well, these guys feel safer golfing without women. Come on.
Well, perhaps. But it looks like different equality,
here.
I think. Sumru Arkut, what about the issue of scale that Charlotte Hayes raises?
Martha Burke said common sense is a good one.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to be getting together with your friends, that's fine. But if you're institutionalizing an organization and making it exclusive, there needs to be justification that by excluding certain people, you are not disenfranchising them.
Let's try and get some more of our callers in. Brian's calling. Welcome, Brian. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I guess I'd like to ask, you know, what is it that these guys are afraid of? I mean, if they're not talking about business and they don't want women around, what are they talking about? I work in an area, I'm a union lawyer, actually, and it's pretty male-dominated. And, you know, there's a lot of sexism, and there's a lot of racism. And what is it they're trying to protect, if not those very things that we're trying to attack?
Well, Brian, let me ask you, can you imagine that it's sexism, that it's racism, that it's all kinds of things. But what they say is, what they're trying to protect is a realm for male camaraderie. Do you buy that?
By camaraderie, I guess, because if they mean by camaraderie the ability to sit around and not talk about business but make the contacts that are going to come through in the business world and talk about the subjugation of women, talk about whatever it is, their latest extramarital conquest, this is what's going on. I mean, and these guys aren't being taken to task about what it is that would be so horrible about having women members.
That's fascinating. Brian, thank you for your call. David Dow, how about it? Do you see something that we could define as male camaraderie that is something other than talking about infidelities and sexism and perhaps racism on the side or not?
Well, I'm somebody who has a weekly poker game, and the only people who play are men. And so I think that there is something to the concept of male camaraderie. But I think the issue is whether that camaraderie can be achieved in some forum other than a large institution that discriminates against half of the population. Charlotte Hayes was sort of saying earlier that it's hard to draw the line. Does it have to be 200 people, 300 people, 400 people? And I agree that it's hard to draw the line. But at some point, an institution becomes large enough that it is no longer just an individual. It's no longer my, you know, poker game in the garage, but it's something bigger than that. And I think that when it gets to the point that it's bigger than that, and reasonable people can differ about how big it has to be, but at some point it gets big enough that I think that it's an institution that communicates a message by its actions, and the state has a legitimate interest in regulating that.
So, Erkut, you pay a lot of attention to these things at the Center for Research on Women at Wellesley College. Do you imagine that this kind of gender line, gender barrier against women at Augusta is something that will endure, or do you see it as inevitably coming down?
It as inevitably coming down. People don't want to be associated with discrimination and bigotry over the line, but there are diehards who want to hold up their face. You know, Hootie Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Said that we're not going to be told what to do at the point of a bayonet. That's very unfortunate. He sort of like drew the line in the sand. This is kind of inevitable, that this is the way the country is moving. And standing in the face of this, he could have said that 10 years ago before the first black member was accepted. And that he's not saying anymore. And he'll come to change his mind. And maybe his family, his three daughters, can join on their own.
Charlotte Hayes, what do you think? Are you on eroding ground here,
or
is the tide turning?
Ground. I hope that Hootie won't change his mind. I don't like the idea that the state or activists come in and try to dictate what these people can do in their club. And the fellow who called in, who described, without having been there, what they talk about, extramarital sex, sexism. I mean, this is just bizarre. Who knows or cares what these guys talk about? This is a personal choice of theirs. Who cares? Thank God I don't have to go play golf.
Well, I think that's wonderful that you don't care, but many other people do. And
yeah,
social change has come at the point of pressure. People who have power don't willingly give it up.
Women are not discriminated against in this society. Blacks were discriminated against, and that's a valid point.
Charlotte Hayes, Samru Erkut, with that, we're going to have to wrap it up, but we look forward or wonder what it's going to be like when the women in green burkas are protesting outside the Masters tournament. at Augusta next spring. I want to thank all of you for joining us tonight. David Dow, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
David Dow is at the University of Houston Law Center. Charlotte Hayes, thanks so much for joining us from Washington.
Thank you.
Charlotte Hayes is editor of the Women's Quarterly at the Independent Women's Forum. And Sumru Erkut, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Sumru Erkut is associate director of the Center for Research on Women at Wellesley College. You can join this conversation on our website at onpointradio.org. In a moment, members of a women-only health club weigh in on all-male clubs. This is On Point. Augusta National Chairman Hootie Johnson says his club's men-only policy is no more exclusive than female-only institutions like the Junior League and Smith College. In Massachusetts, a popular chain of gyms called HealthWorks sells itself as fitness centers for women. Fresh from their workouts, here's what some HealthWorks members said today about their choice of a female-only gym environment and the rights of men to maintain that it's a guy thing.
I feel like people come to an all-women's institution to avoid being picked up. It's a little less of a fashion show. I can come and go looking like a total slob. An all-men's institution might be for the same sort of thing, but I think the nature of attraction is that, in general, women aren't necessarily as predatorial as men. So when you go to a gym, it is the men making the advances, so it would make sense for the women to seek, athletic solace elsewhere. I'm not in favor of segregation of any kind, but as far as having a major, national competition at a place that's an all-men's, it's really hard for me to say that's really sexist and bad as I just walked out of an all-women's institution.
I just feel more comfortable because I used to work out at Case, like the hockey team works out there and stuff, and I just feel them like looking at me. So I like working out with just like women, and it's a more comfortable atmosphere. Like, because I'm just focused on like my workout as opposed to, oh, is my underwear showing? Do my like crotch hanging out? Men have their cigar only clubs or whatever, and it just gives them time to just chill with themselves and not worry about, oh, do I look good, women looking at me, whatever. I don't know, like sometimes you just need to be around like people, not like people of your own, but like just like all women, and it's a more comfortable atmosphere, I think.
As you can see by my appearance, I don't have to get dressed up, I don't have to put on any makeup, I don't have to do anything. I can just show up and not worry about it, because I don't have to worry about the women in there. And we've got, you guys don't want to hear this, but we've got a great spa and a jacuzzi and stuff in there, and it's just great, because you don't have to worry about your body, you don't have to worry about anything. You can just be relaxed with people of the same sex. And you guys stare at our cleavage, no offense personally, but it's nice to be able to wear minimal clothing and not have to worry about it. I think they should be allowed to do that. I mean, if we're allowed to have this, then they're allowed to have that. It's the same thing as it's a double standard. And if we're allowed to have that, then the men should be able to have a place where they can go and be with their same sex and not have to worry about women and being cute and everything. And cleavage. I personally don't have a problem with it, but I know there are women, especially in here, who they straighten their hair every day and they wear makeup and they don't want to be around men looking sloppy. And I can understand why they want to come here and be away from guys. And I can understand the same thing with men.
I kind of think that if women are going to complain about inclusion, then if they're strong enough to complain about it, maybe they're strong enough to build their own kind of, program where they can do their own thing and make, not like a competition women versus men, but, it's something of equal balance where they can feel like they can include themselves and then, gain confidence in that sense too.
Voices of women who had just worked out at Boston's HealthWorks, a chain of fitness centers for women. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Cassettes and CDs of On Point are available for $15. Go to onpointradio.org or call 1-800-909-9287.
This is WBUR. We're funded by...